This is the second episode on Lyme disease. In the previous one, I was talking about what Lyme is, what Lyme co-infections are, particularly Bartonella and Babesia, the difficulty with diagnosing Lyme, and some of the problems leading up to diagnosis and eventual treatment. And in this part, I'm going to go a little bit beyond that into more into diagnostics, the tricky things about diagnostics, treatment, and a little bit more about my personal experiences, but more about why and how this is a political disease. I had honestly never heard of such a thing as a political disease before this, and when I first heard that, I thought that, you know, I don't know, I didn't even buy it. But anyway, I'm going to talk about that because I, through this process, unfortunately, have run into some really, really crazy, from my perspective anyway, things. So with that, I am going to play more from what I had recorded earlier.
Well, given all of the different mechanisms that Lyme has of hiding from your immune system and suppressing your immune system, then that means your immune system is not going to do a great job once the Lyme has been in your body for a while of even detecting the infection in your body. Why is this significant? Well, obviously it's significant for your health, but it's significant for diagnostic testing as well because, as I said, the two tests that are used to detect Lyme disease, which are called ELISA and Western blot, only detect antibodies for a limited number of the many different Borrelia species that can be in your body. So if your immune system doesn't detect the infection because of these cloaking devices, or if it doesn't detect the infection because your immune system is compromised by the infections themselves, then there will not be any antibodies. So you'll get the ELISA test, and the ELISA test will say, negative, this person doesn't have Lyme disease, and your doctor will say, oh, good news, you don't have Lyme disease. Then you may get the Western blot test, and the Western blot test is actually slightly more accurate than the ELISA test is, but so the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, which sets regulations for how doctors are supposed to test for Lyme disease, as well as, you know, everything else in our country, they say what doctors are supposed to do is request the ELISA test first. The ELISA test is approximately, there are varying numbers, but the average seems to be about 30% accurate, which that's my way of saying that in about 30% of cases, it will identify people who are positive as being positive. In about 70% of cases, it will identify people who are positively infected with Lyme as negative. Okay, well, CDC says that's the first round of screening. So if the person tests positive, then CDC says doctors should confirm that the patient is positive by administering the Western blot test. The Western blot test is more accurate than the ELISA test, so really it should be the first round of screening. It's about 50% positively accurate. So again, it's only 50-50. Now, compare that to an HIV test. HIV tests, similarly, only look for antibodies to the HIV virus inside the human body. They don't look for the actual virus. They look for your immune system's antibodies. The difference is the HIV test is 99.5% accurate. The Lyme tests are, one of them is about 30% accurate, the other one is about 50% accurate. So, in a sense, now this is, you know, only for the sake of comparison, because it's not exactly an apples-to-apples comparison, but basically you may as well flip a coin to determine whether or not your symptoms are attributable to Lyme. That would obviously be an irresponsible and stupid way of trying to diagnose yourself, but the point is that when you get the standard Lyme tests, that's basically what the doctor is doing, flipping a coin, because there's a 50 to 70% chance that your test is going to say you're negative when you actually have these infections in your body. And in fact, the worse your case is, the more likely it is that the test will be negative, which is just very, very, very complex and complicated. So that sort of brings us to the role of the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, and the Infectious Diseases Society of America. Both of these organizations don't ask me why. You can, if you read online, you can read a lot of speculation about why these organizations seem to be working against the interest of patients with Lyme. The reasons that they give are that they believe doctors are actually harming patients by administering antibiotics for an extended period of time. Both the IDSA and the CDC say if a person does indeed have Lyme disease, 30 days of doxycycline will cure Lyme disease in 100% of the cases, period. Whether you were bitten yesterday or you were bitten 18 years ago, as I was, you take doxycycline 300 milligrams a day for 30 days and you're cured. Now, mind you, when I was diagnosed back in 1997, I was given 200 milligrams of doxycycline versus the 300 they prescribe now. I was given it for 14 days versus the 30 days that they now say is required. So I was for certain given an insufficient dosage of the antibiotic that is still recommended for Lyme disease, but not enough of it. So that would have killed some of the infection, but not all of it. So that alone basically supports the idea that I have Lyme disease. Well, I didn't know that I had Lyme disease. I never knew. The only thing I was focused on was multiple sclerosis, because that just seemed to make the most sense. Until I started having joint problems, and then until I realized all of my skin problems could not be explained by anything else. Now, I had terrible acne as a teenager, and I have a lot of acne scarring on my face. And so when I started getting stretch marks all over my body, I thought, although it's irrational, I thought, well, I have cursed skin. I'm just cursed. I lost the genetic lottery as far as skin goes, and so this is just my cross to bear. Well, I'm actually relatively thin. I'm about 5'11". I weigh about 157 pounds. At my heaviest, I think I was 173. I've never been anything close to obese, and yet I have stretch marks on my abdomen, on my hips, on my shoulders, on my chest, under my arms, on my flanks. I even have stretch marks on my knees. And, you know, I've lived with shame about this. Well, as I was researching Lyme disease, you know, I just tangentially read about these co-infections that often co-occur. And finally, after, you know, I had read enough about Lyme to think, this is peculiar. This is really strange. All of my symptoms, even though I've been entirely focused on possibly having MS, all of my symptoms also align with Lyme disease. Well, then I clicked on a link to Bartonella, and all these pictures showed up of skinny people with stretch marks. The stretch marks are actually rashes caused caused by this parasitic infection called Bartonella. Again, remember, cat scratch disease. Now, this is a different species of Bartonella than the same one that causes actual cat scratch fever. However, the name applies because these stretch mark rashes really do look like you've been scratched by an animal. They look like scars from a cat having gone wild and attacked you. And I thought, holy crap, wait a second. For the first time in my life, I thought, you know what? It does not make any sense, and this makes me feel really stupid, but it was for the first time ever. I thought, why the hell does this skinny guy have stretch marks all over his body? Because he's cursed? That doesn't make any sense. And, you know, maybe I could say I lost the genetic lottery, but the reality is my mother, who bore two children, doesn't have a single stretch mark on her body. My father, who is at this time in his life a little on the heavier side, he doesn't have a single stretch mark. My sister has a couple, I think, on her hips, but that's all. And so that doesn't make any sense. And my knees. Now, I have never had fat knees. I've put on a few pounds now and then, again, up to 173 pounds at 5 feet 11, but I've never been fat or obese, but certainly I've never had fat knees, so why would I have stretch marks on my knees? So, I finally found my way to what's called a Lyme-literate medical doctor, and this medical doctor looked at my skin, and said, you have Bartonella, and you have a really extreme case of it, undeniably, and that suggests that you would also have Lyme disease, but let's find out. So I'm not going to get into my diagnosis. She did 100 zillion labs, and eventually and pretty quickly, we did find out for sure, positively, according to lab tests, yes, I have Lyme disease. Go figure. So, I don't want to talk any more about my personal story because this has gotten long, and what I do want to talk about now is the political aspect of Lyme, because people need to realize the complications. What I'm hoping somebody will get out of this is that someone who may have something like multiple sclerosis type symptoms, or know somebody who does. For example, I have a my mother's cousin was diagnosed with MS, and then she was undiagnosed with MS, and then she was diagnosed with MS, and then she was told, no, actually, you don't have multiple sclerosis. She was blinded. She had half of her vision in one eye, literally half. She just sort of lost her plane of viewing in one of her eyes, and the other one went totally blind. She was wheelchair bound. She was fully disabled. And if she had had a multiple sclerosis diagnosis, she would have been able to have disability insurance, which of course she paid into federally when she was working, but they denied her the insurance because they essentially stripped away her multiple sclerosis diagnosis after she had been diagnosed with it a couple of times. It was really crazy. And the doctor said, you know, you appear to have something like MS, but we just can't, we can't put our finger on exactly what the right label is, but we can't deny that your body is falling apart. And anyway, long story short, she got an infection and died eventually. So, she is out of her misery. She was suffering terribly for decades, and it was tragic. It was tragic to hear about. So, hopefully, hopefully nobody else is in a situation like that. But if you're in a situation like that, or if you're in a situation like I have been over years and years and years of all of these things happening with no explanation, and doctors saying either, it looks like MS, but it's not showing up on the MRIs, or, you know, you need to learn to relax. This is all in your head. You should go to a psychiatrist. There's nothing wrong with you. Anything along those lines, you might want to look into into Lyme disease. You could have a very well, a stealthy bacterial infection. It could be that simple. So let's talk about the CDC and the International Diseases Society of America, which I brought up a few minutes ago. The CDC and IDSA, there's another tangent I'm going to get into in a separate posting, but, you know, I always just accepted the CDC as a total authority, a trustworthy authority on health issues that exist to protect Americans' health and public health. And I never questioned that until the most insane experience of my life, which happened last October, and it was crazy and unexpected. It came into my life, and literally into my apartment, and it made me start to question a lot of things, and so I would not be saying this had I not had that experience, but I will talk about that under separate cover, and I know that sounds mysterious and probably a little wacky, but anyway, I'm just not going to get into that right now. But the CDC has a lot of affiliations with insurance companies and with politicians. Something the public needs to understand is that the National Institutes of Health, which is under HHS, Health and Human Services Department, NIH exists to conduct and to fund research on health issues. The CDC is not that. They're the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. They do not conduct research other than surveys. What they do is write regulations, and those regulations are followed by state medical boards. So let's say you live in the state of Maryland. Your doctors basically are, you want to go to a board-certified doctor. Everybody knows that. Board-certified doctors are, you know, their competency is endorsed by a medical board of professionals. If your doctor is not board certified, you can basically expect that doctor to be a quack for all intents and purposes because the board did not support them. So that's really significant. They have to be board, your doctor needs to be board certified in order to be considered competent and capable of practicing medicine in patients' interests. Well, the state board, so in this hypothetical situation, the Maryland State Board acts according to guidelines set by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and to some extent by the International or the Infectious Diseases Society of America, the IDSA. When it comes to Lyme disease, the CDC has a very official and very, very strict set of standards as far as Lyme disease goes. And their story of Lyme is that Lyme disease is difficult to contract. It can only be contracted by certain species of ticks in limited geographic regions. The tick has to be on a person's body for 48 hours in order for the person to contract the bacteria from the tick. And the person has to display the characteristic bullseye rash. The person has to test positive first on the ELISA blood test, which again is only about 30% accurate, and then the person has to test positive on the Western blot test, which again is only 50% accurate. So you have to go through this gauntlet of diagnostic criteria. The most significant of which really are, well, actually all of them, you have to show the rash. Well, research shows that not everybody, maybe about 50% of people who have Lyme disease, who have been laboratory serotologically, meaning blood test positive for Lyme disease, only about 50% of those people ever saw a rash. Now, possibly all of them had the rash, but the rash can be on your back, it can be on your butt, it can be on the back of your legs, somewhere where you never look. And maybe you don't have a very active dating life at that time, and nobody else is looking at your back either. So that could easily be overlooked. Then you have to get this test 30% accurate. That has to be positive.